November 4th, 2020, it's a Live from Pedro show. Thank you.
fascists come to rule the world, taking away the hopes of the boys and girls.
Show first Wednesday of the month. Brother Matt, the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, a couple miles south, because we're still in quarantine mode. But I am not totally man alone because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Dan Edelstein from London with me. Welcome aboard, Dan.
Thank you very much, Mike. Really enjoying being here.
Yeah, you sound crystal clear.
Good. I'm very pleased about that.
Must be that mic.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, people, Dan here volunteered to use Logic to record his side of the spiel. But we're going to try to wrestle it here from Pedro. Make the Pedro-London connection. We start off the show with John Coltrane doing You Leave Me Breathless. And then the Orchestra of Cardboard with Jolie. Now, you're right, Dan. I had Jolie on the show a couple months ago. Great guest. Great musician. And Steve Weinstein Foner with the Black Flag. Now, that's probably not the band, huh?
No.
But you know, Raymond Pettibone came up with the idea for that name because they were first called Panic. But he got the Black Flag from the flag in Spain. Is that got something to do with that?
Yeah, something to do with it. Absolutely. It's the idea of a flag with no borders, you know, like a flag. I mean, it sounds like a flag of mourning as well to me. I don't want to put it in a box, you know, this black flag, but it's a feeling of anti-fascism.
Yeah.
You know, which seems important for right now.
Yeah. In fact, there's kind of a tradition of it. It's kind of a conservative value. you can't use that C word anymore. because really interesting. But those four bars, that was supposed to be the flag waving. I remember somebody once called, that's Henry in the Four Towels. Dan.
Yeah.
Search back in your mind, your earliest musical recollection, please.
I think it has to be growing up, like, as a sort of 3-4-year-old child, and just singing songs to myself whilst I played games, you know, almost like narrating the story of the game through a song, you know, and that just sort of story and song and story was always connected for me, you know, right from that earliest childhood, really. And I think music and loss as well, for me is tangled up. Often I think, it reminds me of like the fact that my dad died when I was 3, and weirdly these songs began to sort of come to me in a weird way. And it was sort of all tangled up with that strange childhood that I basically had. That's kind of where it began. It didn't begin by listening. I wasn't listening to a lot of records or anything because my mum basically didn't really like music. I mean, she liked it, but she liked it as something like that you would put on as an entertainment, you know, once every month or, you know, she'd have a cassette in the car occasionally. But it wasn't like I grew up in a household that had lots and lots of music on. So for me, music was something that if I wanted it, I needed to sort of create it, you know, myself. So that's the earliest type of music that I had, I think.
Well, 3 years old is good memory. I can't remember shit when I was 3. Where was this pad?
It was like in Northern Ireland, right on the coast. I was brought up on an island in Northern Ireland, so quite remote. And also, like, kind of quite free as well. Like, we just used to, me and my brother were just sort of out for days and days, just roaming around all this, like, amazing space, you know, and that we had the sea right next to us. And, it's not the kind of Northern Ireland that you hear about in the news, really.
You know of a town called Seaford?
Oh, right. There was a sailing school down in Seaford, too far away from us.
I just did a collaboration with a cat from there. He got together with a cat in Dublin, a drummer man named Bushy. His name was Ian. And they asked me to play bass on one of their, like, 9-minute wailers, and then on the other side, read a poem I wrote. So I have a little connection where you grew up. Now, inside the pad, was there, your mom wasn't much of a listener, but was there any musical instruments?
The only instrument that we had, and like I've sent you a song about this, the only instrument that we had was basically this violin that used to live under the stairs that belonged to my grandmother who had escaped from the Russian Revolution. And my mum always said, your grandmother's violin is under the stairs, and you must at some point learn how to play it, and so weirdly the violin was connected to the history of my family and where I came from. And my grandmother was a brilliant violin player and a dancer and a writer. And so for some reason, my mum seemed to focus the memory of this, bygone time and person on me. So she seemed to connect me and the violin together. And I tried to play I tried to start learning the violin, as a young kid. So that was kind of like the first time I actually tried to make music or, you know, just trying to basically please my mum.
Did you take lessons?
I took some lessons, but I only lasted about a term, and then it wasn't on my grandmother's violin, it was on just a small, a child's violin, And I ended up sort of throwing it, you know, like putting it down so hard that the bridge kind of gave way, you know, and my mum was so angry that she said, right, you'll never play that again. And she sold that violin. That wasn't my grandmother's one. That was just a child's one. But unfortunately, my early childhood was, I became quite rebellious. From the age of six, I was doing like some really crazy stuff. And I think somehow, you know, the violin and the music learning stopped at that point, which was kind of sad. But I took it up again later. But I just took up the guitar at that point.
What about at school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
I tried to get into the choir, but I was told that I remember the phrase was that my voice was in my boots, I was told by the choir singer, you know, the choir mistress or whatever.
That's inspiring.
She told me my voice was in my boots and that I wasn't destined to sing. And what was really interesting as well was that she was called Mrs. Sinclair and she had a child called Henry who was like the school nerd. Is that right? No, she was called Miss McArdle. But this kid, Henry Sinclair, who was the son of the school secretary, he got everyone to say she was so mean. We should stage a rebellion in the class. So he jumped up on this one time. This was amazing. He jumped up on the table and he said, "Come on, boys, let's get Miss McArdle." So he was staging like this rebellion, and we'd all agreed to do it. But then with Miss McArdle in front of everybody at the piano, looking really harsh, everyone froze because she was like one of the most scary teachers at the school. No one followed him up, and he ended up getting into some serious trouble. And you know, everyone else just sat there frozen.
His name? There's a guy in the 1300s in England. His name was Tyler Watt. I remember the name, and he started some kind of rebellion. I think Richard II had to talk everybody out of it. And they ended up cutting his head off or some shit. What was the first record that you bought with your own money?
Gosh, I think it was probably Aha. It was Tiffany. Whoa, I just died in your arms tonight. I mean, I was very young.
They're similar kind of bands. One's more boy, one's more girl, but kind of new wave, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. They were kind of new wave, and it was the 80s. I mean, I think it was the early 80s or mid-80s. You know, I must have been about eight. My brother's first record, I remember, because he's just a year older than me, was like The Cutting Crew.
When you're spending your own money, and you don't have a lot of money when you're young, so that's why you're curious. What was the first gig you went and saw?
First gig, it was probably, we went to a music festival in Southern Ireland called Fela, and there were lots of indie bands there, I remember like James were there, and Rage Against the Machine, and I think Primal Scream were playing there, and we used to go there once a year, every year. So those were probably my first ever shows.
So your first gig was a big festival.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of bands. Okay, I want to play here the Shetlands, some islands near you.
But all that glitters is not Startling leaves, then nary a moment just to realize what the rain puffing in the skies, the skies and stars, we realize our eyes. Like a beetle on his back, like a beetle on his back.
Woodpecker whispers in your ear and everything changes. Tack, 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 tack. He's held in close, defying gravity, paused, upright, defying time. His audible fight. Tack, tack, tack. Faster than you can count, he wakes you from sleep. He wakes your mothers, your fathers, your mother's mother, your father's father. So deep into time that your ancestral past cracks open and spills forth. Tack, tack, tack. Tack, tack, tack. A dance occurs, a romance unfurls. You bear witness to a courtship that happens lightly, a union that happens gladly. Tack, tack, tack. Tack, tack, tack. She answers, she listens. She measures every hint for its purity, its synchronicity, and she whispers in your ear, tap, 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 tap. You look at the world and wonder, what have we done? From so far back, we see a future, and from so far back, we see a need to drop everything, just for a minute, and witness, just bear witness. Just quiet and stillness. Tack, tack, tack. Tack, tack, tack. It corrects itself in stillness. It corrects itself. Tack, tack, tack. Tack, tack, tack.
of an English summer garden. You insisted on the pot of tea and cucumber sandwiches. We lay down in the long grass. We made some jokes. I feel like I'm still there with you. How time passes through. Tell me where you are. Are you still writing letters full of regrets, full of confidences? You locked me out. Are you still hoping for the adventure? You saw the story written on the wall. You saw disappointment written tall. You so regret. You danced with her. There's nowhere else now. You talk of hope flowing down the drain. You talk of Tory.
Where the summers die, the sun casts a shadow down the light and down the drain, the English drain could have been different. Let me know where you are. Why did you lock me out of your English summer garden?
I'm actually going to play that like, kind of like live now with us both listening to it.
Dan, it's already on there. It's zeros and ones. Like your voice and my voice is going to end up, but it's already there.
People, oh, right. So you and I are not being recorded now, are we?
Yeah, we are, Dan.
Oh, are we?
Okay. Tell the people what we just played.
Okay. Or you want me to tell them what you've just played?
You can't, Dan, because you ain't looking at the playlist, but I am, okay? Hold on.
Okay.
The Shetlands, Orchestra of Cardboard. Agnes Steck out of that from Austin after that. Surprise Cracker. Guy by Voices from Dayton, the Pipers, the Vipers, the Snakes, Golden Ghost out of a, now it's, it looks like it's spelled Derby, but in England they say Darby. Golden Ghost, A Woodpecker Whispers in Your Ear. After that from Brighton, England, Leopard from Hellbeans, And then also from Brighton, the Day Glow Exploding Super Infinite with the Unwelcome Ghost of Lord Ha Ha. Then we're going back to the 60s, people, late 60s. Doubt it's that, remember that town I told you, Derby? Well, it's part of this lady's name. Her name was Delia Derbyshire. And she had come up with making music before synthesizer, but still electronic. She used oscillators and she used pieces of tape. And she actually came up and performed the Doctor Who theme. And then finally, the Orchestra of Cardboard with Jolie Holland doing an English guard. Okay, now you can rap, Dan.
Okay. Right, okay, I'm up for the rap. I haven't written any rap songs for you.
No, rap, you know, I was born in 1957, so rap means to talk.
Okay. I'm happy to talk. Probably easier if we just talk rather than me actually rapping.
There used to be a show when I was a boy here. And so when I came from Virginia and I came here as a boy, Southern California. And there was a TV, a local show that was called Let's Rap. And people would come on and, you know, talk about what was going on. So this is before rap music. Although there's Schoolie D, you know, I mean, there's some great rap too. I never got into the word hip-hop so much. I like the word rap. But, you know, if you go back further, it just means to talk.
Yeah.
Maybe rapport, right? It's probably an abbreviation. What about the thing? You told me you left the violin for guitar. Now, did you do the thing after school where you have the basement band, the bedroom band, garage band?
I did that thing, yeah, during school. We had lots of... Yeah, I mean, all that. I did a lot of that. I had, there was a band, I think we called it quite literally Yes Mate. That was like my first band, I think, that I was in, with a friend of mine who went on to play lots and lots of music and in fact is still writing lots and lots of music, mainly for TV and film now. But yeah, we used to busk as well in Belfast, whenever we could, and you know, we just loved writing. We were mainly at the beginning, I think we were doing cover versions of things like James, you know, like Sit Down Next to Me and Knocking on Heaven's Door,
Tell me how you got on the guitar. What was your first guitar? Was it electric guitar or was it acoustic?
I think it was more of a nylon stringed acoustic guitar. I mean, I got really into, like, so when I was like 13 or 14, I got really into Jimi Hendrix. And, you know, I really wanted to learn to play guitar, like lead guitar behind my back and everything. But all I had was this nylon string guitar and like virtually no technical ability. So I remember like, I resorted to like the easiest way of being Jimi Hendrix and just smashed this guitar up by throwing it out of a window and then sort of just trashing it, you know. It was weird because
What was your second guitar?
the second guitar was, I ended up getting a Fender Stratocaster. That was like my first electric guitar. But, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely gorgeous. But the neck was never properly straight, I don't think, because it would go out of tune a bit too easily. So eventually I sold that one. And I think from there, God, I think I'm beginning to get towards my 20s. By the time I've got rid of that guitar, and the most beautiful thing that I got was a Flying V, a Gibson. And I absolutely loved playing that guitar, but of course it was so expensive, you know, I had no money, you know, I was in my early 20s, that, you know, that was the only guitar I could then play on, you know, and I wasn't really Slash or anything, do you know what I mean? I was more of a chords guy, so really I needed something more acoustic-y maybe, or something that could mix those two kind of, at least that could be versatile enough to play both sounds.
You said you're, that band was Yes Mate?
Oh, yeah, that was when I was, like, a teenager.
Yeah, but still, it's your first band. What I'm getting at is, what was your first gig with your first band like?
Oh, my God. That would have been, like, very drunken teenage-style gig where we're trying to impress whatever girls we can and not be kind of chased off by their parents type of thing. You know, it was those types of gigs that kind of like, you know.
Their parents, was it at somebody's house?
Yeah, definitely. It was at people like kind of in either in their garage or in their like kind of front room or whatever. And then, I mean, like you've got to understand as well that where I come from, you know, which is England, I also kind of went to some pretty repressive schools. And I remember once doing a gig at the school around the age of 14 as well. And the teacher said, you're not allowed to tap your foot. You know, it was a lunchtime concert. So everyone had to sit. Everyone literally had to sit on these, like, chairs in a kind of very regimented way and, like, come and listen to a lunchtime concert, you know. And that was a band that I'd set up in the school called The Clouds. And the lead singer, you know, it wasn't me. He said, you know, out in front of everybody, we've just been told you're not allowed to tap your foot. And, you know, so he announced it like that. And then, like, all the teachers got very angry, you know. So we were all, you know, we were sort of like, I don't know, we were doing our best at rock and roll. But it was very, it was in a very, very constrained environment at that point.
Yeah, you know, they were just kind of making rebels.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you what they managed to manufacture mainly was people who have no point of view, if I'm absolutely honest, you know. Oh, people who fit in and take orders.
Well, that's probably their goal, but that's not what happened to you, Dan. Look, we're at the end of the first hour. November 4th, 2020, edition of the Pedro Show. Special guest, Dan Edelstein. Hold tight for hour two. November 4th, 2020. It's the second hour of the Watford Pedro Show.
When my mother was alive, she took me aside and handed me a battered case that lay in a cupboard under the stairs, forgotten for years and years, and told me that inside lay a great treasure. I undid a clasp, and before my eyes lay the broken, battered body of my grandmother's violin, repulsive, covered in dust, abandoned, decayed. Your father.
wife, she carries a little golden purse. But I ain't got a whole lot to show, just a thought or two. Oh, 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 gotta let you go. Buy a new car. The rabbi said the brand new Chevy pretty good, I think.
The priest said, I think the rabbi
let me buy you a drink. But I ain't got a whole lot of shopping, just a
drum on the tune on the
road. Oh, oh, babe, I gotta let you go.
that's rising up instead of the sun.
That's a big, big heart!
Never gonna rain again if I can.
Time of your life, women. about to get upset from watching my TV, been checking out the news until my eyeballs fail to see. I mean to say that every day is just another rotten mess, and when it's gonna change, my friends, is anybody's guess. And on Wednesday I watched the rap, I see the cops out on the street, and I watched them throwing rocks and stuff and choking in the heat, and I listened to the reports about the whiskey passing around. I see this fucking fire and the market burning down. I watched while everybody on the street would take his turn to stomp and smash and crash and bash and slash and bust and burn. But you cool it, you can heat it, cause baby I don't need it. Take your TV tube and eat it. All that phony stuff on sports and all the uncontrolled reports. You know I watched that rotten box until my head began to hurt. Checking out the way the newsmen say they get the dirt before the guys on channel so and so. For the they assert that the show they'll interrupt to bring in news, and it comes up to see if the place blows up. They'll be the first to tell if it's the boys that went downtown. Well, I'm doing it well, and if anybody gets the news before it hits the street, they know no one bastard faster than the coverage can't be beat. I see the fires burn and the local people turning on the medicine. The shops used to sell the rumors and the moms and every other household item. Watch the mom just turn and fight them, and they say it serves them right because a few of them are white. It's the same across the nation, black and white discrimination. Young, you can't understand me. All the other jazz they hand me in the papers and TV, and this mass stupidity that seems to grow more every day. Every time he has something to say, he wants to go and do it again because the color of his skin just don't appeal to him. As we gotta sit around and watch this thing begin. But I put the whole thing in my name, so when they see it's hidden, because the fire's in the street and like the fire in your heart and in the eyes of all these people. Don't you know that this could start on any street, in any town, in any scene, in any crowd? Besides, now's the time to fight for an ideal who thinks is right. As a million more green, there ain't no great society. Is it a class? You're gonna be our country, isn't it free? And if the law refuses to see us, all you can ever be is just a lousy janitor. Unless your uncle owns a store, you know that you're mild and every four just want to mount him nothing more. Who wants to rascal cool across the floor and make up songs about being poor?
city. Oh, please don't make me go out there tonight. Oh, come sweet baby. Oh, let's not. Disco, yeah. You make my distro flow. Oh yes, disco.
Pedro Show. Started off second hour with my mother's grand violin. My mother's grandfather. My grandmother's violin from Orchestra of Cardboard. Yeah. See, I've been doing it all this time, Dan, but I still fuck up like crazy. Okay. Sam Bennett from Tokyo, Gotta Let You Go after that. The Human Hearts. That's Brother Franklin with Big Pink Heart. Thor Harris out of Austin with Robert Halverson. Rob Halverson doing Thanks, Bill. Time of Your Life from Johnny Mark and the Ricks, featuring the late, great Frankie Amwe. Miss him big time. Massive stroke killed him at 64. Trouble Every Day from the Suns, brand new. And then finally, Sad Disco from the Orchestra of Cardboard. Now, Dan here's got a story about the grandmother violin song. People listen.
Yeah. So basically that song came about when my mother, who was dying, basically told me that I had to take my grandmother's violin. It had always been, somehow, she felt it was always going to be mine. And, you know, I always said, no, you must keep it. You keep it. But there came a point where she was really unwell and she said, look, it's time for you to take your grandmother's violin. And I said, okay, I will take it, but I will write a song, you know, about this violin and about my grandmother, and it will be a song which involves the playing of this violin, even though I can't play it. So I started writing a song, and I'd been in Odessa a year or two before, and I'd met a blind accordion player who played this kind of waltz style song. And I thought maybe I could use that kind of waltz groove thing as the beginning of the song, because it was my grandmother came from Ukraine. And so basically I got a really great violin player involved in the song, and I worked with a close friend who was in an Orchestra of Cardboard with me on the arrangements. And the song is kind of like a homage, I suppose, for three characters, you know. One is the violin itself, which I still have, obviously. It's an heirloom. One is for my mother, as a kind of you know, this grief contained in that song. And then the other one is my grandmother, who has already inspired many adventures, you know, in my life, and who is just this wonderful character who represents in my imagination, like, lots and lots of freedom and lots of exploration and experimentation, you know.
So the big number is 3.
Yeah, in that song.
Well, yeah, but that's why I'm saying what's interesting about that, Brother Dan, is that you said waltz, and most waltzes are in 3/4.
Oh, right. Yeah, I never thought
of
it like
a lot of country music, too, but and then jazz does a 6/8 kind of swing thing Elvin used to do. But that's interesting about it. I want to play this Germans in Space.
lucky sand at her feet never thinks to wish her eyes. It's now complicated to be happy. It's an eventful
happy I'll have her tonight. Just to go out and see who's on the scene. I can't be telling you what's happening there. You got the good and the bad and the drunk and obscene. Oh, take me for a ride tonight. Baby, make it feel right. Take me for a ride tonight. Oh, baby, make it feel ill. Oh, make it feel alright tonight. There's a shooting at the bar. Boy came across by. Cops have come and they corner's man. Looking for the shooter on the corner of the Green and Desire. Beats the Alhambra like Molotovs on fire. Oh, take me for a ride.
That's because of the Turkish influence, and they're playing a lot of fives and sevens with that brass stuff, and they don't even think about it. They just, and it's kind of an oompa, but it's not too far of an oompa, you know. But if you grow up, it's just a natural feel. I had to try to cover one of the songs. I had to for a mnemonic device. I used Taco Taco Burrito to get the seven. Gotta do something right. And when you can't feel it, right? My pop used to say, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with bullshit. Okay, we just heard Way of Being Free. That's for your grandma, from the composers. We'll get into that, but because everything's been orchestra cardboard, but we'll get into that. And before that was James Allen, brand new, going down to hear Maryland, a Pedro song. Guy Live Pedro wrote that, sang it. Bad Sam out of Wales with American Fat Fucks. Thank you. The Hawk out of Iowa City with No One Knows. Before that, Are You a Cop? From their new album, Julie Becker is Awesome. Oh, that's a tune. I can't remember what the album is. I think it's eponymous, which means the same name. Vamos de Dolimbo. It's Portuguese, not Spanish. They were on the show last week. Great cats. With Corchow. And then started it all off with Germans in Space. Orchestra Cardboard. Tell me about Orchestra Cardboard. How'd that come together there, Dan?
Well, that was actually, it was after the composers stopped being a thing, which you played one of those songs as well. What then happened was that my close friend and writing partner, Nick, or really producing partner, well, producing and writing often, he moved off to Brazil from London, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but there are some people that you just click with when you're working in different, you know, in different things.
Absolutely.
And with music, I just really clicked with Nick, and we complemented each other. We just both had different skill sets in music. And he is a great producer and excellent kind of co-writer. So I just missed working with him, and then I thought, like, why do we have to stop working together, really? You know, just because we're in different countries, why can't we keep working? And we'd already put out some record, you know, some kind of EPs and stuff through the composers, but we had never made this album. So I actually contacted him again, and I said, look, let's make an album. Let's just go for it. Screw the fact that we live in different countries. Let's try and find a way of working down the wires together. You know, like, there's no reason why with the internet you can't record something and you know, with whoever you want to work with and wherever they are. Why should we be constrained by these kind of ideas that you need to have, like, a band who are all in the same place and all have exactly the same type of ethos or whatever? You know, so I began to think, well, we could just do this in a different way.
Trading files.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, trading files is definitely a way. Although he comes back and forth from Brazil to London, so we do actually also record together in studios around London. But what I do miss is the live performance, and in fact, the drawback of this is that it's much harder to actually get together and play. But when it first started out, he would just help me produce. So, like, with Germans in Space and stuff like that, he would produce tracks for me, and then I created some cardboard, and my wife helped me as well, some cardboard cutout figures, and I would go on stage with them and play the backing tracks that he created, and then I'd play over the top with my guitar and sing live. And so I did quite a lot of gigs that way around London.
Tell me about the first one, the first cardboard orchestra cardboard gig.
Okay, yeah, it was massive. I mean, it was, so there's a friend of mine who runs a big club in London called, I think he's got two club nights. I think one of them was called, like, something ennui, like worry, and the other one was called Club de Fromage, but he drew, like, large audiences. So we had about five, or, well, for me, large audiences, 500 or 600 people there, and I was supporting a band called the Hoosiers, who are quite well known, well, or who were well known in England, like, you know, back at the moment where I was doing this. And yeah, and I just basically got up in front of like hundreds of people and just went for it, you know, and I never played on my own like that before.
And you had cats with you with cardboard heads.
With these cardboard cutout things just standing there on the stage, kind of propped up with weird stands, and then backing tracks, and then me just
they actually weren't playing, right? Because your buddy Ken's was coming over the PA system, right?
Yeah, those things were basically just like big cardboard cutout, kind of like, you know, cardboard mixed with wood, effectively, like just static things that can't actually play anything at all. And yeah, so it was just basically me with them. It's pretty strange, I guess, for the audience. I don't think they were expecting it, you know.
How'd you get them there? You didn't bring them on the subway.
I cannot remember the detail of how I must have driven.
Okay.
There's no real other way. I've always had a van of one kind or another. So they must have just come in the van.
Okay.
In the back of the van, yeah.
Now how was the response?
Well,
gig goers.
Yeah, I think people enjoyed it. I just don't think they were expecting it, you know. They'd come to see a traditional indie band. What I would say is a kind of middle of the road indie band, but there was this kind of like totally kind of quite chaotic. Well, I wouldn't say chaotic, but quite experimental thing in front of them.
Dan,
you know.
Dan, I think that's great, man. I think what you did, because when things get typical and predictable, it's over, man. You might as well just be sleepwalking or painting the number or connecting the dots. So what you did was great. I'm on your side, Dan. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. November 4, 2020. Special guest, Dan Edelstein. Sorry. Hold tight for hour three. November 4, 2020. It's the third hour. The Watt from Pedro show.
Soho, Peeping Tom, girls, 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 what shall we do with ya? Cup of tea, love, property, I got to go now, to the cemetery, Jack the Ripper, and Ever Brown, we dazzle together, now they're leaving town. In the psycho town. East End Alley, late at night, red lights flashing, on the prowl. Do us a favor, love, for me, cafe home. Got to go now to the cemetery. Jack the Ripper, Vanessa Brown, the dance together. Another leaving town in the psycho town. Together, and now they're leaving town. in the psycho town. In the psycho town.
go, the people you know, the choices you make, is the route that you take. Oh yeah, there's something I'd like to take to you.
Show, we start off the third hour with the Orchestra of Cardboard. Now you understand why it's an Orchestra of Cardboard, people. Dan's got a bunch of cardboard stiffs, literally, behind him. Are they behind you or next to you?
Yeah, they're around me. They're like okay. Bands.
It's like Stonehenge.
Yeah, it's like Stonehenge. It's a bit, I mean, you know, they're kind of more like behind me, but to the left and the right, like a normal band should be, right?
I hate that word, normal.
Okay, yeah, not normal,
then. Typical.
Yeah, a typical band.
Yeah, but people say normal, why can't they say healthy?
At the time, though...
You know what I mean? When I hear that word normal, I just, I'm thinking of, like, where you went to school there when you were young, and everything's all strict and shit. Okay, yeah. We had Psycho Town, and then Wasted Space with the Lost Tapes, number 3, Side F of Alice Croupier, the final 3-cassette thing from Bronze Age UFO out of Baltimore. And finally, Portraits and Rain. Portraits and Rain. I get, you know, if you're going to pick 2 things in the world, why not Portraits and Rain? Or what about a portrait of Rain, like Vincent, right? His brother was packing all that fine art from Japan, and Vincent gets part of the newspaper for, like, a whorehouse ad, and he copies that. Amazing. You know, we were talking about why I like to talk about people's journey on the show, because everybody's journey is different. You know, for example, Joe Baez didn't start guitar till he's 27. Vincent, he only painted his last 10 years. He drew when he was young, but he never painted. So, no wine before it's time. I noticed the Orchestra Cardboard. You'd like to do a lot of collabs.
Yeah, I do. I mean, like, it seems to me the question is, like, why not, you know, when the technology is there? And I guess if you...
Corollary? There's a corollary to that. Yeah, I'm using geometry talk here. Why does a dog lick his balls?
Gosh. Are you going to tell me the answer?
Yeah, of course. Because he can't. And I think that's the same thing. I mean, if it's in the realm of possibility, yeah, why not? So since you worked it out with Nick, being able to, like, collab over many miles, you've got the collab thing kind of down. So why not bring in, you know...
That's kind of what I was thinking. Yeah, we didn't used to do that so much. Like, we started to collaborate a bit with different singers, like... around London. So on that song with the grandmother's violin song, we got this singer called Garance, who's a French singer based in London that we know, and she came in. And then I was recently doing a song which I really wanted a German voice in, and it was a song, like, it's on their Spotify called Not the End of the World, you know, and I wanted it to kind of have a robotic, slightly kind of science fiction vibe. I sometimes imagine these things, like, these songs are like films almost, and you're trying to almost like cast the voice, you know, the person who does the voice is like an actor, if you like, taking you into a world and a situation. So, you know, I don't think one has to... There's no need to necessarily have to sing all your own songs. You can write songs and try and find people whose voices can bring them to life in a way that, you know, I couldn't. Like, so that's kind of like how I've been thinking about that. But then also the music, you know, there are musicians out there who just play amazing stuff, who are just totally unique, and maybe you just want to sprinkle a little bit of that into that song, you know, and see where it goes. You know, you don't, It's life is just one big experiment in a way. So why constrain oneself to these kind of rigid structures of a rock band, you know, or whatever that's supposed to be? I think you can always question things and sort of try and invent the thing that you want. You know, that's how I begin to think about it. And it's only quite recent that we started to collaborate more, and that's where the collaboration with Jolie and Stevie came in, because it was...
Well, what about this, Dan? Jess Braun.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's play Creditocracy.
Creditocracy.
One thing I know for certain, we gotta stick it to the man behind the curtain. We got to draw the line.
Creditocracy is the kind of society that I think we're living in, where most people are very deeply in debt that can never be paid off. The point is that the creditor class wants us to be in a lifetime of debt service. They don't want us to pay off our debts entirely, because if you pay off your debt entirely, you're no longer a source of profit to creditors. So they want to keep us on the hook for as long as possible. Until the day we die. Until the day we die. Beyond the grave.
The sheer hypocrisy of the morality of debt. If you don't pay your debts, you're a bad person. If you're not working harder than you'd really like to be at something you don't enjoy, you're a lazy person. The morality of work and the morality of debt, I think, are the major things that are holding the system together. And if we can do something to undermine that, I think the whole thing will just start falling apart. We'll be forced to actually figure out a more reasonable way to live.
Things are not going to change when they start to actually act themselves and build power at the grassroots scale and in the financial markets. We're not going to
happen. I was sitting getting my hair cut. Oh, have you seen this thing my friends did? I studied economics, so I'm kind of fascinated by the idea of debt and the
do what we do, that isn't about throwing bricks through windows. It's better than throwing bricks through windows. Throwing bricks through mines. Throwing bricks through mines.
One thing I know for certain,
ocean, the end of the world. But my mind is free. Shame my dancing shoes in you. My cigarettes are true. Cigarettes at the end of the world. But me and you can dance together in the ballroom of my dream. Let's do some dangerous. Cigarettes of beauty. It's the end of the world. You're a very special girl. You're a very special girl. I'd take you around the world. Can't you see? It's the end of beauty.
Show. Last music for this edition. We started it off with Jess Braun and Dan Edelstein doing Creditocracy. Now, I noticed it ain't credited as Orchestra of Cardboard. And then we had Snort Sonata for Glenn Gould, Xenocrotic AMM All-Stars featuring myself. Ben Watson had me aboard. There's a group of I think the drummer man was from Vandergraaf Generator, real improvisers and stuff. And I've been submitting some minute-long bass voice, and they put together that tune out of three of them. And then finally, Orchestra Cardboard, Cigarettes at the End of the World. So, yeah, Jess Braun and Dan Edelstein. Why that credit and why not Cardboard, Orchestra Cardboard?
It might be Orchestra of Cardboard eventually, actually. It's because I was rushing, to credit that one. I haven't really talked to her about how that goes out. But basically that, like, Jess Braun has basically helped write all the music, or not all the music, because actually me and Nick did some. And I think Jolie and Stevie, one of those songs is on there too. But Jess was, like, the main writer on the film that we've made that's coming out in December. As part of that, I really wanted to try and take some of the voices from the film. We're talking about credit, you know, as I'm sure you've got it there, creditocracy, this idea of a creditor class who are trying to indebt people and basically turn us into economic slaves, you know. And I wanted to try and get some of those theorists, and because I loved what they were saying, and I wanted to try and splice it up, you know. But I don't have the technical abilities to do that. I do not know how to do that. So Jess was just brilliant, and she's incredibly she's very dynamic. She works very fast. She just has such a, you know, like the whole idea of producing is like an instrument in her hands that she could just chop things up and turn them into whatever she wants. She can create whatever she likes. So it was really interesting to work with her, and she's a brilliant singer as well. That's the thing that she really loves the most. I think she sees herself as a singer. But I also see her as an amazing producer, and it was just really lovely to be able to kind of collaborate with her on that. So yeah, There's a number of songs there that I would like to kind of put out on a CD or bring out somehow when the film comes out. So it's not like right now, it's the focus is the album, The Antidote, with Jolie and Stevie and Nick. But I think when that's finished, we'll bring something out, me and Jess, and it might go under Orchestra of Cardboard, but it's just that she's done most of the hard graft. I've just come in saying I'd like to take these voices and do this, this, and this. You know, she's done more of the hard graft, so I don't know if it's fair.
Yeah,
it's all Orchestra of Cardboard.
We call it the heavy lifting. Dan, where can people find you on the internet?
Spotify is Orchestra of Cardboard. There's also an Instagram for
No. That's other people's telephone poles you can put flyers up on. I'm talking about your own website.
Okay, my website is bankjob.pictures, really. That's where most of... Oh, yeah, and Orchestra of Cardboard.
Yeah, because I found Orchestra of Cardboard. .com.
Oh, well done. Yeah, you see, now I'm going to the wrong place because I'm so obsessed with Bank Job at the moment that I just said the wrong one. So, yeah, orchestraofcardboard.com is the right place. And
it's a great site. You got a lot of stuff. You got a picture there when you were 3 years old or something.
Yeah, you see, because it always goes back. You know, you asked me earlier in the show what was my first musical memory or whatever. And it's always, for me, I always go back to that time when I was, like, such a young kid. It was the beginning of me. And yeah, I was sent away to boarding school as well, you know, at the age of 5 or 6. And onwards, I didn't stay at home. I was away. So music was the only thing that would connect me to, like, some kind of, something that made sense.
Wow, that's
beautiful. I used to listen to music on headphones the whole time, you know, at night.
What we're saying is music ain't just some frivolous little side thing. It can be really fucking strong in your life.
Totally. I mean, it was the thing that kind of kept me sane, and also that I thought there is a world beyond the walls of this kind of repressive dormitory, you know.
Yeah, thank God. Okay. People, it's been November 4th, 2020 Dishwap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.